Throughout the ages, history has been altered by word of mouth and the misrepresentation of those who might not have been present when some of the world's most significant events took place. Channelers Barry and Connie Strom bring through the spirits of those who actually witnessed or took part in these historical events and lets them tell their stories in their own words. Welcome to Channeling History. And now, here are your hosts, Barry and Connie Strom.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to thank you for tuning in tonight. Welcome to Channeling History. We're the only show where we speak to the souls that made things happen, and we're brought to you on the Parax Radio Network. I'm Barry Strom, your host, and I will be speaking with the spirits tonight.
And I'm Connie Strom, your co-host. And I'd like to also welcome you all to our show. If you'd like to interact with us in the chat room tonight, just go to Parax Radio Network and click chat. In our last show, we channeled what it was like to know with Jesus. Our guests were the spirits of John the Baptist, John the Apostle, Mary Magdalene, and Peter. This was a very informative as well as inspirational show. The video is available on our YouTube channel. The channel is in the name of Barry Strom and now has over 540 videos. If you'd like to download the videos, just go to Podomatic.com and search Channeling History. So please tell your friends about it so we can continue to grow our audience. Tonight, we're going to channel famous actors who served in World War II. We will speak with James Stewart, Clark Gable, Audrey Hepburn, and Jackie Coogan. All of these individuals gave up lives of fame and luxury to serve our country.
Well, before we start, let's do a small disclaimer. The opinions or statements voiced on our show are the channeled words of the spirits, do not necessarily reflect our opinions, those of the Parax Network, or of our sponsors. And Connie, before we channel, we always say a prayer of protection. So why don't you say the prayer and we'll get started.
God, please grant us your wisdom and protection. Grant us the knowledge that we can handle and keep us safe from all things that will harm us. Keep the messages positive and pure love. Keep us safe from our egos. We ask these things in the light of the seen, the unseen, and the honesty of God. Amen.
Connie, it's going to be a good one tonight. I know these people, I've heard so much about them as we grew up on the movie screen and television, and so it's going to be a good one. James Stewart, his film career spanned 80 films from 1935 to 1991. He was known for his very strong moral character in both the characters he played, as well as in his private life. He walked the walk, and he certainly talked the talk. He retired from the military in 1968 as a brigadier general. So, Connie, let's talk with Mr. Stewart.
Sir, I hope you aren't offended if I call you Jimmy, but that's how I always heard of you before. Thank you for joining us. What was it like to be a movie star in the 1930s?
It was an incredible experience. Everybody looked up to you. It's very competitive, but it was just something out of this world. Hollywood was make-believe, and we had some of the most beautiful people in the world that were participating in acting. Sometimes the movies were good, sometimes they were wonderful, and every once in a while they were pretty bad as well. When you were a well-known movie star during the 30s, it was a phenomenal occurrence. It was just everybody knew your name. When you walked down the streets, they would point, they would come over, they would ask for autographs. It was a new industry. We were experimenting with different techniques. We were coming from black and white and silent movies. And now, all of a sudden, we were starting to use Technicolor. It was almost an indescribable time.
Tell us about your experience with airplanes before joining the Air Force.
I was always fascinated with airplanes. I got a pilot's license. I learned to fly. I did many, many things with airplanes. I was fascinated with them. I realized that it was going to be a way to the future of fighting wars. The airplane had just become into existence during World War I, but it had proved that those that control the skies control the battlefield. So I was very enthusiastic about the future of air power.
In February of 1941, you were the first major movie star to join the Air Force. This was almost a year before Pearl Harbor. Why did you enlist so long before we were actually in war?
I could see what was coming. There was no doubt in my mind that Japan and Germany were going to try to take over the world. The Nazis were starting to invade the different smaller countries. They had taken over Ethiopia. They had a wonderful air force. The Luftwaffe was the state of the arts. I felt that the United States was falling behind both Japan and Germany. And I wanted to try to bring what little expertise I had to others and try to teach them and have them understand that in the very near future we were going to have some major problems.
So in 1943, you requested to be sent to England to fly B-24 Liberators. This was the most dangerous time to fly missions over Germany. Why did you make such a dangerous request, other than the fact that you were really courageous?
This was the time that we were bombing. The Germans had bombed London. They were trying to bomb England out of existence. They had conquered all of Europe, and I understood that if we didn't stop them, it was going to be a terrible thing for our country. I felt that I had some expertise. I thought that I could help the boys that were flying these incredibly dangerous missions. And I just thought it was something I should do for my country.
Thank goodness for people like you. You flew over 20 missions in B-24s over Germany. What was it like?
Hell. When we would fly over, they would be firing their double-A aircraft guns at us. There was flak everywhere. The Luftwaffe, the fighters, were trying to shoot us down. We were flying in large formations, and it wouldn't be uncommon that you'd look up and see 25, 30, 40 fighters coming at you. In those days, they didn't have the missiles to stand off like you did, so they would come in close. They would fire their cannons at us, their machine guns. It would not be uncommon to see the plane next to you being shot down and all the boys dying as the plane exploded. It was frightening. I mean, I can't say that I wasn't scared the whole time I was doing that. We were over Europe in these missions. I can't tell you how bad it was. In those days, if you made 25 missions, you were lucky. It was not uncommon that we'd lose 10, 15, 20% of our planes on a single flight. In the beginning, our fighters couldn't accomplish this as far as Europe, so we were on our own. We would fly in very large groups for protection, but it was something you almost can't describe.
When you volunteered, did you think you would survive the war?
You always think you're going to survive. It's not until you're over there when the shrapnel's hitting your plane that you think, well, maybe this is it. You have to have faith in God. That's the one thing that will pull you through situations like this.
Absolutely. What do you think when you see our modern military pilots fly the modern airplanes?
I'm astonished with the technologies. In our day, the fighters would get within 100, 200 feet of us firing their cannons. Today, the planes can stand off 20, 30, 40 miles and fire their missiles at each other. Technologies are incredible. someday there probably will not even be manned flight. It'll all be beyond manned. There'll be technology that takes all the danger out. But it's progress. Sadly, the abilities to kill humans has increased almost exponentially. The killing power of modern weapons is utterly phenomenal.
Yes. In your bombing missions over Germany, the bombs that you dropped took many civilian lives. How were you judged for taking those lives when you returned to heaven?
When we dropped the bombs, we realized that we were killing civilians. But it was those civilians that only allowed the war machine of Nazi Germany to do what it was doing. In many instances, the civilians hated the Jews. We didn't realize it at the time we were dropping the bombs, but the Jews were attempting to wipe, or the Nazis were attempting to wipe Jews off the face of the earth. When I returned, I was not judged harshly for it because we were protecting the United States. We were protecting the innocent. If we didn't stop Nazi Germany, they could have taken over the world. They could have entirely wiped Jews from the face of the earth. They were incredibly brutal people, and we were not judged harshly for it. We were actually well judged because we had helped protect innocent people.
What do you think about patriotism in the United States today?
It's a tough decision. Sometimes you think that there are many, many people that are not patriotic to the United States. There's a huge number of people living in the United States now, and yes, there are many people that are not. But don't forget, in my day, there were also many members of the Communist Party that lived in the United States. There were Nazis that lived in the United States. The war consolidated the war effort. The people realized that they had to take a position, and the young of the United States joined the military, fought. Hundreds of thousands of them were killed. They did what they had to do. My generation stepped forward when they were needed. You don't really know how the young or the people are going to respond until the need is there. Things have changed drastically. You have social media, news, many of the information sources are driving people in different directions. Governmental attitudes have changed. In our day, they were pacifists, just as there are now that think we should not be defending the country. If the United States does not maintain leadership in the world, then freedoms as we know it will disappear. The United States is still the greatest country in the world. You have China, you have Russia, you have Iran, you have countries that are trying to undermine your country, our country. If these people are not stopped, the results are going to be the same that took place in my time. I think that in times of need, people will step forward. It happened during World War II. It happened during World War I. I think that when individuals understand that their backs are to the wall, they will fight and defend what is right. It has always happened in the past with this wonderful country, and I think that if the country is truly threatened, it will happen in the future.
Yes. What is your opinion of modern movies?
The technology in modern movies is beyond belief. As we watch from over here, we cannot believe how modern movies are made. However, I think that the movies we made had staying power. If you look at the list of great movies, you'll see that a lot of the movies that we did in the 40s, the 30s, are still regarded as classics. I can't imagine that many of the movies they're making today will be regarded as classics 30, 40 years from now.
I think you're correct, although there are some good ones out there, too. Thank you for joining us tonight, Jimmy. It's an honor. Do you have a final message for our listeners?
Yes. Never forget that the United States is the greatest country in the world. There will be times that you have to defend it. There will be times that you have to do things that you don't want to do. And there will be times that our boys will be lost fighting to defend it. There are always countries that want power. There are always countries that want to rule the world. Those countries are going to have to be controlled. You might as well make up your mind now that when you have the opportunity to control these countries, perhaps through sanctions, economic sanctions are often very effective. The democracies and free countries of the world have got to stick together, or that you will find that those freedoms will go away. We did what we had to do in my generation, and I'm sure that the new generations will act prudently as well. So thank you for allowing me to speak once again. I'm always happy to do so. So thank you, and goodbye.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Okay. Well, that was very interesting. Yeah. Clark Gable had roles in more than 60 motion pictures in a career that lasted over 37 years. In 1942, he joined the Air Force and flew combat missions with the 8th Air Force, earning the Air Medal and Distinguished Flying Cross. So we all know his wonderful acting career. But let's investigate a little more just how what this guy gave up and what he accomplished for the country.
Yes, Clark, thank you so much for joining us this evening. In the 1930s, you were one of the most famous actors, winning the Academy Award for Best Actor in 1934 and nominated for many other awards. Why did you want to join the military?
I had several reasons. My wife had passed unexpectedly, and I knew that I had to do what I had to do for our country. The United States had given me an opportunity to gain fame and wealth. I felt that I owed something to the country. I wanted to protect it. I wanted to do what I could for the war effort. I know that I probably should have joined the military earlier, but I had things, my personal life had been very difficult with my wife passing, and I guess I simply should have done it earlier.
But you still did it. That's what's important. You initially joined the First Motion Picture Unit. What was the purpose of this unit?
The purpose of the unit that I was put into initially was to make films for recruiting. It was very necessary that the young joined the Army, Air Force, Navy, whatever. We still had many people in the country that had not stepped forward to help join the military. There's always people out there that'll let somebody else do the hard lifting. The brass in the military felt that if we did proper recruiting movies, I had public attention. They felt that if I put together some recruiting movies that we would draw many people into the Air Force. You cannot believe the magnitude of the war effort if you didn't live through it. We were sending hundreds of thousands of our boys forward to fight in the war. The demand for people in the military was actually staggering. And they felt that I could be best utilized in doing recruiting.
So how successful were those efforts at recruiting?
Actually, they were quite successful. They credited me with bringing several hundred thousand people into the military.
Wow.
That watched the movies. I did my best, and my heart was in it because I felt so strongly that we needed to fight to defend our country.
Then I assume that you were satisfied with your role in making those movies.
Yes, but I wanted to do more. I requested that I was allowed to go over to Europe, that I was allowed to work with the mighty 8th Air Force. They were flying bomber missions over Europe every day, and I felt that I needed to be there. I wanted to try to take movies of what they were accomplishing. I had been to gunner school. I wanted to try to understand exactly what it was like to be in these B-17s. It was so much different. As Jimmy explained, you were up close and personal with your enemies, and especially the gunners. The gunners were in the most dangerous positions because the fighters would try to knock their positions out first. It was the gunner's responsibility to defend the airplanes. If the enemy aircraft managed to kill the gunners, the planes were basically defenseless. So I wanted to do my best to understand and to help.
Yeah. What were the German fighter attacks like during a bombing mission?
The German pilots were extremely experienced and well-qualified. The Luftwaffe was a premier air force. They had hundreds of planes. Their planes were very maneuverable. They were formidable opponents. In the early days, our fighters did not have the range to extend protection to us as we went over Europe. You would see these basic swarms of fighters come out of the sky. Keep in mind that you have to understand the size of the bombing formations. Often there were over 300 or 400 of these huge bombers in formation. By keeping in formation, you could defend your buddy next to you. But these bombers would come down. They would try to blow holes in our formations. They would try to destroy some of the ships. We were losing a large percentage every time. It was, in many ways, very difficult to describe, but it was like a swarm of bees coming out of a hive coming after you. The gunner's responsibility would be to swat the bees and to kill them before you would be stung by them. It was very difficult to describe, but it was, as Jimmy said, it was hell.
Yeah, was that your fourth mission that you were just describing?
It was. Our fourth mission was the worst that I had been on. The formation was, we started off with 330 B-17s in formation. When we got back, 25 of our ships had been shot down. It was hard to describe. There were times during this flight that I actually did man some of the guns. But you have to understand, being a gunner in the Air Force, the doors were open on those ships. The temperatures were well below zero. We had these electric heated suits that we wore trying to keep warm. Frostbite was a major problem for the gunners. If you had a problem and you lost the heat in your flying suit, you could die from the cold as easy as you could from the cannon fire.
Yeah, we had read that you were almost killed during that mission. Is that true?
Yes. I was in the waist gunner positions. One of the fighters hit us with 15 rounds. one of the bullets actually hit the heel of my boot that I was wearing and passed that close. I played it down to the press and to all the officers, but yes, I guess you could say I was almost killed on that flight.
Thank God you weren't. How many missions did you fly in total?
I flew about 10 missions in total. We were filming for recruiting, and I wanted to do as much as I could.
Did you work with Jimmy in recruiting efforts?
I met him in recruiting efforts, but once we both came to Europe, we were pretty well separated.
What do you think when you hear the World War II veterans referred to as the greatest generation?
My generation came forward and did what they had to do. World War II was a greater effort than you can ever imagine. We were fighting in the Pacific. We were fighting in Europe and Africa. We were fighting in so many places. It just took so many of our boys demand the equipment that was required. I was in the European theater, but some of the most vicious and terrible fighting took place in the Pacific. The Marines in the Pacific were island hopping, taking these different incredibly fortified small islands in the Pacific. They were seeing hell on a regular basis. Many of them never came back. In World War II, we lost over 400,000 soldiers. That's 400,000 American families that were disrupted, that lost loved ones, husbands, wives, fathers. But in spite of all the losses, the young guys came forward and did what they had to do. They fought in ways they never had to fight before. They suffered. They did everything that was required to them, and they came back victorious. If my generation had not stepped forward and done all that was required, the world would be a far different place. When I hear people refer to us as the greatest generation, it makes me feel good. We didn't think about it as we were doing the events, but once it was over and we looked back, we realized the incredible accomplishment that we had done. In many ways, it was a generation that will not be forgotten. The sacrifices, some of those boys were away from home for years fighting. Especially the Marines in the Pacific, they saw brutality beyond description. We had boys in prison camps. They would do everything they could to resist. They would try to escape. The members of our generation did what they had to do. And I like to think that in the future, if the country is truly, truly threatened, that the young will step forward. Things are much different now, but I think that there is a strong nucleus of the young that would still do what was required.
That is true. I have really enjoyed speaking with you this evening, sir. You are a fine soul. Do you have a final message for our listeners?
Yes. Just as Jimmy said, I want you to all understand that the United States is the greatest country in the world. We were actors. We pretended. We lived in a make-believe world. But when we were thrown into the real world of war, we did what we had to do. Many of us had a true faith in God, and it helped bring us through. I cannot describe to you that first feeling when you come into true combat, and you know that there are people out there that are trying to kill you. There are people out there that want nothing more than to see you dead. It's quite a reality. Many people Many people had problems. Many people came back from the war with problems, mental problems. Today, PTSD is a huge problem for our military. I would hope that those of you out there that could help, if you know somebody suffering from PTSD, assist them. PTSD is real. We used to call it shell shock, but by whatever name it's an incredible illness, leads to great depression, and can lead to suicide. Do what you can to help the veterans. Nothing is going to change unless you're the ones that take the lead. So thank you for allowing me to come through. Yes, we were actors and lived pretend lives. But when the chips were down, our generation did what they needed to do. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Audrey Hepburn. She is ranked as the third greatest female screen legend from the classical Hollywood cinema. She was actually born in England in 1929 and was quite young at the outbreak of the war. She returned to the Netherlands and got caught up in the Nazi occupation when they took over the country. She performed ballet to raise money for the Dutch resistance and did much more. Throughout the war, she did what she could to help defeat the Nazis. So, Audrey, thank you for honoring us with your presence.
Yes, thank you, Audrey. You are in very good company tonight, and you are too. You grew up in pre-war Europe as the Nazi Party was growing in power. What was Europe like as you were growing up?
In Europe, the people realized that there was a great problem, that there were storm clouds on the horizon. They understood that World War I had left scars. They understood, I think, that Germany was becoming this terrible power. They understood the hatred that the Nazi Party was spouting. You could see the German war effort. They were industrializing. They were creating weapons. They were creating a huge air force. They had scientists working on great technologies. People generally feared the Nazis. The French thought that they could build the Maginot protective line and they would be safe. The people in the Netherlands, they had remained neutral through World War I, so they felt that Germany would not invade their country. They felt that they could remain neutral, as Switzerland had done. People were very fearful. Many of the members of the Jewish faith were trying to flee, were trying to go into other countries to be safe. Many members of the Jewish faith thought that things would be okay, but they had absolutely no idea the hatred that the Nazi Party had for them.
Why did you choose to return to the Netherlands when the war broke out?
My mother thought I would be safe there, that she would put me in a boarding school. She believed that the Germans would not come into the Netherlands, that they would probably go, things would probably happen like they did in World War I, but that was not the case. One of the first things that the Germans did was to invade the Netherlands.
In 1940, the Germans did invade the Netherlands, as you said. What was it like during that German occupation?
It was terrible. It was a time of fear. We changed our name to German-sounding. We did not want anyone to think that we were part of the opposition. The Germans were rounding up members of Jewish faith. They were very brutal. Their police would do whatever they wanted to do. There was little rules that covered them. It was a time of total fear. You would try to avoid any contacts that you felt the Germans would oppose to. It was, we thought that it would be a short occupation. Sadly, it went over 5 years, but it was just a time of living in total fear 24 hours a day.
How was your family in particular treated by the Germans?
My uncle was executed by the Germans. There had been an act of resistance, and even though he had not participated in it, the Germans would try to set examples. They would take city officials out and execute them, thinking that that would help stop the resistance. When I started losing family members, I decided that I would have to try to participate as best I could. That in reality, if the Germans came after me, there would be very little they could do. So I did do what I could to try to help the resistance.
Yeah, what in particular did you do to help with the resistance?
I was a trained ballet dancer. I would have underground ballets. We would raise money that would be used and given to the resistance. As time went on, I would be able to get in positions that I would be able to learn information. I would know where German officers, where their living quarters were. I would give that information to the resistance, and they would act upon it. If I found out where arms were being stored, the locations, I would give them information. I did not actively carry weapons, but I tried to give them as much intelligence as I could through that time. I would try to learn as much as I could about what the Germans were doing, and I would pass on as much information as I could.
You were a brave young woman. What was it like watching the Dutch Jews being taken to concentration camps?
I cannot describe the sadness. I was a young person myself, and I would see these young children being loaded into these rail cars. I would see them being separated from their parents. We truly did not understand that they were being taken away to be killed. We thought that they were simply being imprisoned, that they were being taken away. We never comprehended the full horrors of what was taking place until later in the war. We started hearing rumors that the people were being executed en masse, that they were taken to these concentration camps. Many of the people were being put into labor camps. My own brother was sent to a labor camp. They were forced to construct bomb-proof areas to work making weapons. Many people were being forced to go into these different labor places to work. Sadly, when the Allies started to strike back and bomb the cities, many of the civilians were also being killed as well. So it was just a horrible time. And I can't describe what it was like living under Nazi occupation.
Yeah. During 1944 to 45, the Germans reduced the food supply for the Dutch citizens. How did that affect you?
The Germans decided they would try to starve the Dutch citizens to death. They dried up the food supply. We did everything we could do to find minimal nourishment. I was suffering from malnutrition. The resistance taught us to make flour out of tulip bulbs. We basically scrounged for our food. I became very weak. I started to suffer illnesses from it. The malnutrition affected me for the rest of my life. The Germans were brutal. They did not care in any way what they did. All they wanted to do was to establish total dominance over the Dutch people.
How did you survive that war?
And as the war was culminating, it was very, very difficult. As I just mentioned, we had no food. They were intentionally starving us. I started to develop malnutrition. I became very sick, and there was a distinct possibility that I wasn't going to survive at that point. I had a friend that smuggled cigarettes to us. I sold cigarettes on the black market to try to raise money. I used the money to buy penicillin, and I think that that is the only thing that saved my life, was the fact that I scrounged up enough funds to buy the drugs that I needed to cure some of the sicknesses that the Germans had brought upon me.
Okay, you were trained in ballet. Why did you turn to acting as opposed to dancing?
The malnutrition had weakened me so much that I had limitations. I realized that I was never going to be able to be a true ballerina. I just simply did not have the strength for it anymore. I was literally skin and bones at the time of the ending of the war. People considered me very attractive, and they suggested that I turn to acting. I was given some acting lessons, voice lessons, and I tried to combine that with the natural dancing talents that I had. And I was very lucky. God blessed me with the opportunities, and I tried to take advantage of them. But simply because of the malnutrition, I was too weak to ever become a true prima ballerina.
What is your opinion of modern movies?
As I watch them, as the others have said, I am also astonished at the modern technologies. Sadly, I think these technologies are leading people away from high quality classical type music or movies. Today, movies are based on action, on violence. The actors are put into situations where they have to do the best they can with the technologies. Many of the modern actors, I don't think, have the great abilities that you saw in classical Hollywood. Jimmy, Clark, these were incredible actors. The people loved them. And the movies that they made have endured for many, many years. Today, you're seeing the theaters inundated with a different type of movie. We're not seeing any of the great acting that we saw in the past. There are some wonderful actors, but I don't think that they're given the opportunity. The younger generation does not have an appreciation for great acting. They want to emulate their video games with the movies. And I just don't think that currently the movies live up to the past.
I agree. Audrey, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Do you have a final message for us?
Yes. Thank you for allowing me to come through. I appreciate the opportunity. Many people forget just what we do, what we accomplished in the past with our classic movies. take some time and look at the old movies. Look at the wonderful actors that made some of these great classics. Go back and watch Gone with the Wind. Go back and watch some of Jimmy's movies. They are some of the finest ever. So I thank you for this opportunity to speak. Thank you for allowing me to come through. I know that Jackie is standing here, and that he is waiting to talk to you as well.
And we're looking forward to talking with him.
Okay, Jackie Coogan. He was born in 1914, began his film career as a child actor in silent films. He was very famous for his work with Charlie Chaplin, and he remained active in the film industry until his death in 1984. He's probably best known for playing Uncle Fester in The Addams Family. I know I used to watch that show every week, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Jackie, thank you for joining us. As Barry was saying, you were a well-known child actor during the silent films. What was it like in Hollywood during those early days?
Well, there was nothing to compare it to. We were the beginning. The silent films brought forth some of the great actors. Charlie Chaplin was took me under his tutelage. The movies that I made with him were very popular. It was a time that acting was very different. If you didn't have to speak, it really didn't matter what your voice sounded like. But I was very gifted in my appearance. I could act. I could do what the producers wanted me to do. And as a child actor, I was very successful. But there were no rules in the beginning. As Hollywood expanded, things changed. Talking movies came out. Many of the stars of the silent days couldn't make it. Many of their voices were not attractive in the movies. A new type of actor and actress came forward. Some of the great stars, some of the great presentations came forth. When color, Technicolor began, things changed again. The movie industry was growing. Very few people owned the studios. They had incredible power. And what they say would take place.
What was it like to be friends with Charlie Chaplin?
Charlie was a great person. He had his flaws, like any of the rest of us. He did some things that he probably shouldn't have done. But he was an incredible actor, his facial expressions, the way he did things. Charlie was wonderful. He was very good to me. He saw that I was protected in the movies that I was in with him. And Charlie Chaplin was one of the greats.
Were there any financial protections for child actors during the early days of Hollywood?
No. I found that out the hard way. My parents were supposed to be taking care of investing my money that I made, and I made a lot of money as a child. I found out in my 20s that she had spent it and had squandered it, and that I basically was relatively poor in spite of all the monies that I had made. I was instrumental in founding laws to protect child actors, but there was no protections, as I found out the hard way.
It's so sad. So why did you enlist in the Army in March of 1941?
I felt that it was my patriotic duty. I loved my country. I'd had a good life. I had lived well. I saw that Japan and the Nazis were creating great problems. And I knew that it was inevitable that we would have to fight until they were defeated. I wanted to do my best, and I enlisted.
You requested a transfer to the Army Air Forces as a glider pilot. Why did you request the glider training when it was such a very dangerous thing to fly?
I knew the gliders were very dangerous. I had flying experience, and I felt that I could serve in an area where individuals were not volunteering. The glider forces were a very unique part of the Air Force. I felt that it was a place people were not volunteering, and I felt that it was necessary. So I offered my services to fly gliders.
Wow. Yeah, then you volunteered duty with the 1st Air Commando Group. Tell us about the Air Commando Group.
The commando groups were basically fighting behind the lines. They would perhaps parachute in, or we would have to fly them in and land on these primitive landing strips. The commando groups were some of the best trained in the Army. They could fight. Some of these groups would go in and spend months living on their own behind enemy lines. They knew that if they were captured, they would be killed. The Japanese were very cruel, and it would be a very difficult death. These guys were highly committed to their missions. I was a pilot, and I volunteered to help work with these groups. I felt that it was instrumental. I felt that somebody had to do it, and I felt that I was very well qualified.
In 1943, the unit was sent to India. Would you please describe the missions you carried out during the Burma campaign?
The Japanese in Burma were incredibly cruel. They were killing the people. They had overrun Burma. The British were taking basically control of the Burma campaign. We were flying British commandos behind the lines, and we would take them into these small primitive landing strips, perhaps as much as 100, 150 miles in the rear. We would fly in at night. The landings were incredibly dangerous. Often, the fields would be lit with flashlights so we could see where to bring our planes down. These commandos, the British were some of the finest fighters in the British Army. We would bring them in. We would drop them off, take off, and try to fly back to our bases. Sometimes we would never hear from them again. Sometimes they would be back there for months at a time. To be a British commando in Burma was one of the most difficult assignments. What we did was very dangerous, and God bless me to the point that I made it through all of the dangerous times that I spent. When I got out of the military, I really didn't want to speak about it that much. Some of the things that we had done were top secret, and I just simply wanted to forget a bunch of it.
Yeah. My dad fought in World War II, and that's the way he was. He never talked about it. Why did you decide to return to acting after the war?
I had had some popularity as a child actor. There's a big difference between getting jobs as a child actor and as an adult. But it was really the only thing that I knew. I didn't want to try to find a new occupation. So I did the best I could finding jobs in the acting industry. I felt that it would be the best place for me. And I was very lucky when I was chosen to play Uncle Fester. Television was a new medium, and I was starting to get a little bit older. And I did not exactly have the appearance of a leading man at that time.
What do you think of our current generation's attitude towards the military today?
There are always the young that oppose the military. There were pacifists in my time before the war. There were young people that said we should never get involved, that we would be safe because the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans would protect us. We found out the hard way at Pearl Harbor about that. But I believe that in times of true need, there will always be many of the young that will step forward to protect the country.
Jackie, as you watch from the other side, do you think there's any hope for peace between humans?
There's always peace, but today it's going to be very, very difficult. Many years have built hatred, especially in the Middle East. What you're seeing today is terrible. What the terrorists did to the innocent Israelis was brutality that could only be compared to some of the things that the Japanese did to us during the Second World War. The hatreds that are being created will go on for generations. Whenever many people are killed, the one thought is revenge and hatred. I honestly don't see from over here what can be done to eliminate that hatred. I know that many of the saints, the angels, many of us over here try to influence individuals not to hate others and to accept equality. But when you look at what is taking place, it's very difficult to believe that peace can become a reality, especially with Russia, China, and Iran joining together to try to create as much havoc as possible. But I thank you for allowing me to come through tonight. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you so much. God bless all of you and goodbye.
And God bless the four of you. You are all wonderful souls, and I'm so glad we were able to talk with you tonight.
Okay. Next week, we're going to talk with three past presidents of the United States. And we're going to get their opinions on our modern government. We're going to talk to George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and Ronald Reagan. Now, if that is not an interesting show, I don't know what I can come up with. My 10th book, Modern Messages of the Archangels, is available for purchase. It can be bought in paperback, hardcover, ebook on Amazon. Signed copies are available on my website, barrystrom.com. We compiled the messages of 20 different archangels. It would be a great Christmas present. I think that anyone that you give it to would be very appreciative of it.
Okay. Looks like we're about done. I'd like to thank you all for joining us this evening, including our four guests. I hope you all have a wonderful week. God bless you all.
Okay, and thank you for tuning in. We always appreciate looking at the names in the chat room. Sometimes we don't have time to respond to you like we should. An hour flies by very fast, so thank you so much. Thank you for listening. Please join us Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Para-X Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to Channeling History. Tune in again next week for another electrifying episode, as we never know who will make an appearance or who will come through the portal. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2020. Our story begins by Kevin MacLeod, licensed through Incompetech.com.